1 Samuel chapter 10, please. Sorry, maybe 1 Samuel chapter 9, for sake of connection. Just to tell you where we're kind of going with this, because you might not think of 1 Samuel chapter 9 and 10, and actually the first part of 1 Samuel, which, first of all, we read about the first chapters are devoted to Samuel himself, and then the middle part's devoted to King Saul, and the end part is devoted to the experiences of King David. But they're all kind of linked together. And they give us some instruction about leadership. To be a leader, what does it mean to be a leader? And what does it mean to be a leader amongst the people of God? Everyone is a leader in some sphere. For example, in a home, parents are leaders. In a home, husbands are to be leaders as the head of the house. There are people who have responsibilities to manage in a workplace. They're leaders. There are brethren who are leaders in the assembly as elders or in other roles in the assembly. So there are people who are leaders. And we find that there are some principles of leadership that are in the Bible, and they are exemplified sometimes by bad examples and sometimes by good examples. And so we want to look at today, as the Lord gives help, the establishment or how a person becomes a leader or became a leader back in the days of Israel. And they are instructive because they show us a little bit about how leaders are chosen, how people become leaders even today. There are some similarities. So we'll start in 1 Samuel chapter 9, verse 2. It's talking about this man of Benjamin, Kish. And he had a son whose name was Saul, a choice young man and goodly, and there was not among the children of Israel a goodlier person than he. From his shoulders and upward, he was higher than any of the people. And then verse 17. And when Samuel saw Saul, the Lord said unto him, Behold the man whom I spake to thee of, this same shall reign over my people. Then Saul drew near to Samuel in the gate and said, Tell me, I pray thee, where the seer's house is. And Samuel answered Saul and said, I am the seer. Go up before me into the high place, for ye shall eat with me today, and tomorrow I will let thee go and tell thee all that is in thine heart. Turn over to chapter 10, please. And I must apologize, this is not an overly well-prepared message, but trust the Lord will give us help as we try to explain these verses. Verse 1 of chapter 10, Then Samuel took a vial of oil. This is the next morning. He has now got Saul with him. He takes a vial of oil, and it says, And poured it upon his head and kissed him, and said, Is it not because the Lord hath anointed thee to be captain over his inheritance? When thou art departed from me today, then thou shalt find two men by Rachel's sepulchre in the border of Benjamin at Zelzag, and they will say unto thee, The asses which thou wentest to seek are found, and lo, thy father hath left the care of the asses and sorroweth for thee, saying, What shall I do for my son? Then shalt thou go onward from thence, and thou shalt come to the plain of Tabor, and there shall meet thee three men going up to God to Bethel, one carrying three kids, and another carrying three loaves of bread, and another carrying a bottle of wine. And they will salute thee, and give thee two loaves of bread, which thou shalt receive of their hands. After that thou shalt come to the hill of God, where is the garrison of the Philistines. And it shall come to pass, when thou art come thither to the city, that thou shalt meet a company of prophets coming down from the high place with a psaltery and a tabret and a pipe and a harp before them, and they shall prophesy. And the Spirit of the Lord shall come upon thee, and thou shalt prophesy with them, and shalt be turned into another man. And let it be, when these signs are come upon thee, that thou do as occasion serve thee, for God is with thee. And thou shalt go down before me to Gilgal, and behold, I will come down unto thee to offer burnt offerings and to sacrifices of peace offerings. 7 days shalt thou tarry till I come to thee and show thee what thou shalt do. And it came to pass, and it was so, that when he had turned his back to go from Samuel, God gave him another heart. And all these signs came to pass that day. And when they came thither to the hill, behold, a company of prophets met him, and the Spirit of God came upon him, and he prophesied among them. Trust the Lord will bless to us the reading of his word and other scriptures we may look at. So here is a man who's chosen to be leader. And he's chosen to be leader because God has chosen him. It's interesting that God had given instructions that he was going to establish the throne of David. He was going to establish Judah as being the leader of the people of God. And the tribe of Judah would provide the king. But here is a man from the tribe of Benjamin, and he is going to be the first king of Israel. So why did God choose him? And what are the things he's going to do for Israel? Well, it says he was a choice young man and goodly. He was head and shoulders above many of the others of Israel. It was not God's idea to have a king. God wanted the people to serve him and to not have somebody who was in the middle, someone who was between himself and the people. But the people wanted to be like the nations around. They wanted to have a king. They wanted to have protection. The Philistines were making great gains into their land, and they wanted to be protected. And so they were crying to God for a king. So Samuel, he wanted to continue the dynasty that was there, where there were judges. He wanted to have his sons appointed as judges, and they would continue to judge. But his sons were not of very good caliber. His sons were not respected by the people. And so when Samuel became old, they said, well, you're old, Samuel. Time for you to let somebody else lead. And so he said, well, my sons, they'll lead. And they said, no, they're not acceptable. We want a king. And so this man, Saul, seemed to be somebody who could be a king. Somebody who could lead the people. So Saul's out doing his father's bidding. He's looking for some donkeys that were lost. He can't find them. He's been several days searching for them. So finally he says, I'll have to go and see the seer or the prophet. And he finds his way to the city where Samuel lives. And he is going in the gate and he meets Samuel. And Samuel has already been informed that you're going to meet a man today, and you're to anoint him as a future king of Israel. So God has this appointment. God has chosen, he's chosen the man, he's set the conditions, he's set the events. And so Samuel meets Saul, takes him to a banquet. Saul is honored at the banquet. It must have been quite an exhilarating thing for him to go from searching for those donkeys to being the chief person at the banquet, the one who was honored. But so that's the way Saul did it. So Samuel did it, and the next morning, Samuel then anoints Saul and says, you're going to be a future king of Israel. So Saul doesn't reject that idea, but he's perhaps taken aback by it. And so then he gets instructions as to what he's to do. And here is his preparation. First of all, he's to go to Rachel's sepulcher. Now, Rachel's sepulcher is not very far off the road and not very far from the outskirts of the town of Bethlehem, interestingly. And he's to go to Rachel's sepulcher. Now, you'll remember what happened that caused Rachel's death and why her sepulcher was in this location. She was the wife of Jacob. And she was the one that he really loved. But when she gave birth to her second son, whose name was Benjamin, she died. And a marker was put up there, a memorial was put up there, so that people would know that this is where Rachel, the wife, the beloved wife of Jacob, died. And so he's told, first thing, you go to that sepulcher of Rachel. And so he should have been reminded when he went that his beginning came from the death, of one of his ancestors. If Rachel had died and the child she was giving birth to had died at the same time, he wouldn't be there. Benjamin would never have been born. But Benjamin was born. He was alive. And this led to the whole tribe of Benjamin coming into existence. And so this man, Saul, he was told to remember the death of Rachel. He was told to remember her death. And you know, if anyone is going to be a leader in any Christian environment, in any way, that is the first thing we have to recognize, is that there has been a death that is responsible for our life. We would have no life apart from the death of our Lord Jesus Christ. And that's why it's so important to keep close to him. Why it's so important every Lord's Day to come and remember him and to think upon him and to appreciate what he has done. And so he is to come and remember Rachel and remember her death. And what's he going to find there as well? He's going to find that his problem has been solved. That which was lost has been found. And so he finds that they've found the donkeys he's been looking for, and his father is no longer caring for them. His father is starting to sorrow for Saul. He's wondering what's become of him. What should he do for him? So he learns of the concern of his father for him at that place. And we learn about the concern of the father for us when we think of what his son was willing to do for us at Calvary. So now, after he's been at this place, he's to go forward from thence onto the plain of Tabor. A plain is sort of probably a flat area, perhaps not too much vegetation. Perhaps there was vegetation at this time of the year, I don't know. But as he's going across that plain, he's going to meet three men. One's going to have three kids, that is, three little goats. And another is going to have three loaves of bread. And the third is going to have a bottle of wine. So what are they doing? They're on their way to offer a sacrifice, on the way to Bethel. And they're taking a kid for each one of them. And they're taking loaves of bread, three loaves of bread. And they're taking a bottle of wine. So it's going to be a drink offering. And they're going to offer the bread and they're going to offer the animals. And so as they make their way, they encounter Saul. And Saul, he hasn't had anything since the banquet the night before, I guess. And so God is going to teach him a lesson about provision. Saul doesn't have to worry about provision for himself. God will provide. And God takes of those things which have been the exercise of the hearts of people to offer to himself. And because Saul is now the anointed king, it's offered to him. And so Saul has this to go forward with, that God will take care of his needs, that God will look after him. He is the one who's been anointed to do this particular work, to be the king, and he can rely upon God. So when it comes to the role of our exercising whatever leadership role we have in the home, in the assembly, wherever it might be, we can be confident that God is going to meet our needs if we honor him and if we give him first place. And so this was what God was teaching Saul. Again, it's hard to say how well Saul learned these lessons, because in future days it seems like he didn't really learn the lessons very well. But continue on here. He says that they're going to give him two loaves of bread, which they did. Then he's going to come to the hill of God. And this would seem to be possibly even the place where he lived. There was a garrison of the Philistines there. So here's the hill of God, and the Philistines have so infiltrated the country that they have a garrison planted in that city or in that town. And they're there in order to try and control the people. They're there in order to see what expansions Israel has and how they can conquer Israel, because Israel is their enemy. And so he says, when you're coming into the town, you're going to see a company of prophets coming down from the high place. So these prophets come, and they're coming with psaltery, and they're coming with a tabouret, and they're coming with a pipe and a harp before them. They're making music, and they're prophesying. And as Saul is there, the Spirit of the Lord is going to come upon him. And the Spirit of the Lord is going to turn him into another man. So Saul hasn't really had any spiritual exercises that we know of. I don't know if Saul ever went and offered a sacrifice before this. Maybe he did. But it doesn't seem like he has been a spiritual man. But here's the promise: the Spirit of the Lord will come upon you, and you'll be turned into another man. And so he begins to prophesy. Prophesy to the extent that the people are saying, is Saul amongst the prophets? Raising a question, is Saul is so changed? Why? What's come over him? What's happened to him? And you must remember that in the Old Testament times, the Spirit of God did not indwell the person. The Spirit of God came down upon them for a particular work or for a particular time. With you and I, when we're saved, the Spirit of God comes into our lives, and the Spirit of God indwells us, and the Spirit of God is desirous for our development, desirous of leading us and guiding us. If we resist the Spirit of God or we quench the Spirit of God, then the Spirit of God is not going to have his way in our lives. So it's important that we give ourselves fully to the Spirit of God and are led by him. Of course, the Spirit of God and the Word of God go together as they impress upon us what we should do and when we should do it and so forth. But here's the potential. Our characters from what we were before we were saved can be completely changed, and we can be turned into another man if the Spirit of God is allowed to have his full control over us. And so Saul, for a period of time, becomes another man as the Spirit of the Lord comes upon him. Then he says, in 7 days, go before me to Gilgal, and I will come down unto thee to offer burnt offerings and sacrifices of peace offerings. So Saul does these things. He follows them, does everything Samuel says, and he prophesies. It seems as though there's been a change. He accepts the bread. It seems as though he's accepted God's provision. He's gone to Rachel's tomb. He's heard about his donkeys being found. He's been happy with that. But has he been changed? Well, as we read further, it says, verse 9, that God gave him another heart, and all these signs came to pass that day. And it says there was something else that happened that wasn't on Samuel's list of things. And that is found in verse 14. Saul's uncle comes and says to his servant and to Saul, "Whither went ye?" And he said, "To seek the asses." And when we saw that they were not nowhere, we came to Samuel. And Saul's uncle said, "Tell me, I pray thee, what Samuel said unto thee." And Saul said unto his uncle, "He told us plainly that the asses were found, but of the matter of the kingdom whereof Samuel spake, he told him not." So I don't know if Saul was wise or not. Maybe somebody could tell me after the meeting. Saul does not say anything about being anointed as a king to his uncle. Maybe he doesn't want to build family expectations. Maybe he's not confident in the call that he's got. Not sure. Samuel is not going to withhold the information, though. Samuel calls the people to Mizpah, and they all come, and he announces to them that he's going to choose a king. Now, he knows who the king is, but he wants the process to work the way in which Israel chooses things and decides things, which are of a congregational nature. And so he brings them together. He says, "Present yourselves before the Lord, and by your tribes and by your thousands." So Samuel caused all of the tribes of Israel to come near. And out of those 12 tribes, the tribe of Benjamin was taken. And he caused the families of the tribe of Benjamin to come near. And out of all those families, the family of Matri was taken. And Saul, the son of Kish, was finally taken and identified as the one who God chose to be king. And then they started to look for Saul. He wasn't around. Saul was hiding in the stuff, it seems, amongst materials. Saul wasn't there waiting to come forward. It said, "He hath hid himself among the stuff." That's what the Lord answered when they inquired as to where he was. So they fetch him, and they bring him, and he stands higher. Verse 23 says, "He was higher than any of the people from his shoulders and upward. And Samuel said to all the people, 'See ye him whom the Lord hath chosen, that there is none like him among all the people.' And all the people shouted and said, 'God save the king.'" And so this particular gathering at Mizpah and going through this process confirmed what already had been confirmed by Samuel in meeting with Saul, that Saul was going to be the king, and the people accepted it. So Saul was happy, the people were happy, and Samuel sent the people away, everyone to their own house. But there were two that weren't happy. One was Samuel, the other was God. God was not happy that Israel had decided to go this way. And if we were to read later, we would find that God shows his displeasure by sending a thunderstorm to ruin their crops. And looking, just skip forward to chapter 12, verse 15. "But if ye will not obey the voice of the Lord, but rebel against the commandment of the Lord, then shall the hand of the Lord be against you, as it were against your fathers." So here is a warning that's made to Saul. If you won't obey the voice of the Lord, if you're going to rebel against his commandments, the hand of the Lord will be against you. Solemn thing for any individual to disobey and have the hand of the Lord against them. A more solemn thing to be a leader, to be a king, and to disobey and have people, have a nation fall into disobedience. How serious for one who is a leader to disobey and have people fall into the hand of God being against them because their leader has fallen. And so it is a serious thing to take on leadership in the sphere that God calls us to and the sphere in which he's looking for leaders. Now, it says in verse 16, "Now therefore stand and see this great thing which the Lord will do before your eyes. Is it not wheat harvest this today? I will call unto the Lord, and he will send thunder and rain, and that ye may perceive and see that your wickedness is great, which ye have done in the sight of the Lord, in asking you a king." So Samuel called unto the Lord, and the Lord sent thunder and rain that day. And all the people greatly feared the Lord and Samuel. So they had chosen a leader. God had permitted them to have a leader. But that was not God's perfect will. God's perfect will was that they would honor God and give God the place of king. But now they put a man in the place of king. And God is showing his displeasure by this thunderstorm that comes in the middle of harvest season, the time when it should be dry, the time when they should be able to get out and get their crops off. And the people find that very unusual, very strange. And it says they greatly feared the Lord, and they greatly feared Samuel. Samuel was the one who had the connection with the Lord, not Saul. Samuel was the one who could get the Lord's will and guidance, not Saul. And so Samuel has the Lord speak his mind as to the things that have happened in Israel that day. Now we could find that Saul is very successful in his first attempt to preserve the people. The Ammonites have come, and they've come to Jabesh-Gilead, and Saul has come to deliver them. And he delivers them, showing his power as a leader. His power is based on having them fearful. He's not constraining them in love. He's constraining them with fear. And how does he do that? It says here, if we were to read the text, that he took a yoke of oxen, two, I assume, and he cut them up in pieces. And he sent them around to Israel. And he said, if you don't come to Jabesh-Gilead and help us fight against the Ammonites in Jabesh-Gilead, then your oxen are going to be the same as these oxen. And of course, when the people saw that, they were dependent upon those oxen. They used them for plowing. They used them for all sorts of things. They were the work animals of the farm. And so when they saw what Saul was sending out, they came out of fear to Jabesh-Gilead to help fight. It says that there were 300,000 people who came. A tremendous army came. And they had a wonderful victory at Jabesh-Gilead. The Ammonites were completely destroyed. It says at the end, there weren't two of them who were together. They were dispersed completely. So this solidified the role of Saul as a defender of the people of Israel. He defended them well. He defended them, and he relied upon fear. But it says the fear of the Lord came upon the people. So the Lord used this to bring a victory, in spite of the fact that to us today, it may seem like not a very, very good way of proceeding, but that's the way he called the people, and that's the way he got a response from them. The tribe of Benjamin was known for doing rather cruel things, and that would be one of the characteristics of the reign of Saul, that he would use cruel tactics against people. So the leader that was chosen, while people rejoiced in him at the beginning, they soon found that there are difficulties and problems. Now, it's interesting that in Saul's rise to power, it was so quick. He was anointed one night or one morning, and within a week he was anointed before all the people, became the king. Think of King David. How long did it take him to become the prepared leader? It took him years and years to become the prepared leader. He was led through all sorts of difficulties and trials, had all sorts of challenges. And yet David was a humble man. He was a man who sought the Lord's guidance. He was a man who let the Lord lead him, and in turn it prepared him to lead others. I remember how he was ready to go down into the valley to fight the giant Goliath. He was a man who would not be deterred by the fear of others. He moved forward, knowing that the Lord would have him go down. Remember that he went into the tent of Saul before going down, and Saul himself, who was a large man, much larger than David, wouldn't go down. And Saul said, "Wear my armor, please." But David wasn't going to do that. I don't know why. Was Saul so concerned about David's protection when he was going down to fight the giant? I'm wondering if maybe Saul thought, if people see David wearing my armor, then they'll think that's me going down, and I'll get the credit. I'll be the one who's considered brave. Saul wasn't beyond being deceptive. But David would have none of it. He wanted to go down with just the things that he was used to in doing battle. And he went down with strength and brought down the giant in the name of the Lord to glorify the Lord. And you know, if we have challenges and difficulties, if we put the Lord's glory and honor first, and what will glorify him, not what will suit us, but what will glorify him, we put that first, then God will give strength and God will give help. And God will bring the victory in the situation. If we think that we can solve the problem without the Lord's help, then we're going to be subject to failure. You know, when we look at our lives, and I'm getting white hair. Some of the rest of you may be getting a little bit of white hair too. But I look back and I think of difficult times. Those are times of preparation. Those are times when the Lord was preparing and giving an appreciation of certain things. You look back and think of the challenges. But sometimes there are things in life that came quite easy. And you kind of look back on them and say, how much did I learn from those? Were those things that were of value to the Lord? The Lord brings us through certain situations, and he's trying to develop our understanding of what it is to be a leader, our effectiveness as being leaders in our homes, our effectiveness as being leaders in the church, our effectiveness in being leaders as we would bring the gospel to the unsaved. May we be responsive to when the Lord deals with us. The Lord might do it in a short period of time. The Lord might do it over a period of years. But when he does, we should be responsive and learn the lessons that he would have us learn. Sadly, I'm not sure that Saul learned the lesson of the tomb of Rachel. Not sure if he fully realized that God would provide for him. Not sure if he fully realized that the joys he had that day when the Spirit of the Lord came on him were joys that he could have throughout his lifetime, because it says later on in his reign that an evil spirit came upon him, and he didn't have that joy, and he didn't have that assurance of being a new man as he had that day, the first day after his anointing. So I trust that these simple thoughts will be of some help to us. I had thought of going into the life of Saul and looking at all the failures and saying, here's what we shouldn't do as leaders, in whatever capacity we are leaders. But perhaps it's better just to focus on the preparation for being a leader, because that's probably the situation that we're in some, to some extent at least. And we can all learn from the lessons of Saul, learn from his failures, and learn from David as well, learn from his successes. But David didn't just have successes, he also had failures. But God saw David and said, "This is a man after mine own heart." And so he was a king that was acceptable to God, replacing Saul in that role. Let's look to the Lord for his blessing.